A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, this week's episode of the Lords Cricket Podcast is with Marcus Truscothick, a batsman who played 76 tests for England between 2000 and 2006, averaging 43.79. He scored 14 test hundreds with his final one here at Lords. His battles with depression have been well documented, and in 2008, he released an autobiography, Coming Back to Me. It was a poignant book and one of the first sportsmen to really open up about mental health. These days, it's far more widely talked about, and that's clearly a good thing. He's now in his 26th season as a county pro with Somerset. Quite some achievement. I went down to Taunton earlier this summer to catch up with Marcus and chat about his England career, and in particular, that final century here at Lords.
What I remember most about the day is if there had been DRS, I probably would have been gone a lot earlier.
You're listening to the Lords Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe. These are the stories from the home of cricket, with the people that made them. Marcus, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good stuff. We're actually recording in Taunton today, your neck of the woods. This is your 26th season.
Yeah, hard to believe, really, to think that it's lasted so long. I never sort of saw that this was going to be the length of what it would be. I sort of joined at 16 years old and just wanted to play cricket as much as I could, and been here sort of ever since, really. So 42 now, and it just sort of, you know, keeps going and going. But you know, it does get harder, of course. The body gets a little bit more older, and the knees hurt that every day. But still great fun. It's obviously been a nice start to the season as well. So you know, it's always good times when that happens.
And it's your testimonial year.
Yeah, it's an interesting year. It's quite busy, as you can imagine, trying to organise everything and be involved in certain events that you put on for people to attend. But good fun nonetheless. It's my second one. I had my first one in 2008, but I'm enjoying this one this time around.
And how have things changed playing for Somerset? You started your career in 1993. Your debut was against Lancashire.
Yeah. Quite dramatically, I would say. You know, just the professionalism side of the game is ever moving forward, you know, because in introduction of T20, you know, the style of play, the athleticism of players, the approach for what people are trying to do, and, you know, trying to invent things all the time, trying to find that competitive edge of the game. You know, it's so much more detailed and professional, athletic, that people are just you know, ever improving and making that sort of spectacle for people to come and watch, because it is fast, it's furious at times. And people have then taken it on into the, you know, the longer formats of the game, the 50 overs, and then also the 4-day games and test matches. You've seen much higher scoring rates and a lot less games going into 5 days.
Do you think in many ways you were potentially a bit before your time, listening to you chat there? You were an extremely attacking batsman in a time where there weren't that many around. I can sort of think Virender Sehwag off the top of my head.
Yeah, I guess so, a little bit. It just sort of, that was the style I had. And it wasn't necessarily that I was trying to be different or trying to do anything outrageous. I was just naturally sort of, you know, didn't move my feet and tried to hit the ball as much as I could. So, you know, on good pitches that you generally got here at Taunton, you could manage to do that. Not always possible when you went away from home, but it was just a natural style that I had, and it sort of it led well for one day cricket in particular, and then you could obviously adapt it a bit more for 4-day cricket as the game went on.
And growing up, you came from a real cricketing family. Was it in the blood?
Yeah, I guess it was. My dad used to play a lot. He played quite a bit for, you know, sort of growing up with second team cricket here at Somerset. Never actually played full-time professional, but, you know, played for Keynsham Cricket Club, where we spent hours and hours with, as a family there, watching dad, or I was playing somewhere else and they'd all be watching as well. So week in, week out, when you got summertime, it was just cricket time. You'd be at the cricket club or you'd be playing somewhere else. So, yeah, it was always good fun.
Marcus Truscothick grew up with cricket all around him. Born in Keynsham in 1975 in Somerset, a real cricketing part of the world, he rises through the age ranks. In 1991, aged 15, Marcus scores 4,000 runs in one season and wins a trip to Lord's for that feat. He meets England bowler Angus Fraser, the West Indies cricketer Carl Hooper, commentator Brian Johnston, and the then England manager Mickey Stewart. But first, Marcus remembers the dramatic way in which he gets those 4,000 runs.
I was never somebody who ever sort of sat down and wrote down all the awards or the runs that I scored, but Mum did. Mum collected all the information, and I remember, obviously, I knew going into the last game of the season, I needed 85 runs to get to 4,000 in the year, so pretty nervous getting into it. And it was lucky, really. I was 83 with the last ball, and I'd inside edged it to the keeper. We ran the single, and I was thinking, oh no, 3,999, that can't be. The keeper's then shied at the stumps, hit the stumps, and the ball's ricocheted off, and we got through for a single to make it a bang on 4,000. But yeah, very interesting times. You know, to pick up a lot of runs over the course of the year was pretty special. But to get that trip to Lord's, you know, I think I might have been there once or twice into the nets before, but, you know, to be in the environment I was, as with Gus Fraser, Carl Hooper, and Mickey Stewart was there, Brian Johnston was there, obviously, also, just to meet these sort of guys and heroes that you're sort of seeing playing, watching them on TV was pretty special. I got to have a bat in the nets. They bowled a bit at me as well. And it was a special day. We've got some pictures back at home in my mum and dad's place where of the photos of the nets on the wall. So it's still the memory's still there.
Was that the old MCC sort of indoor school then?
Yes, it would have been. We actually used the nursery nets.
Oh, really?
They allowed us onto
you
the nets.
Onto
yeah,
it.
We were. It was only probably for half an hour, 40 minutes. But we had a little net outside. We also just utilised indoors as much as well, yeah.
And I think Mickey Stewart decided to put you on a training programme over the winter because you'd missed out on England under-15s duty.
Yeah, something like that. I think, obviously, that was my first experience, really, of meeting Mickey. I got to know him a lot more after that through England under-19s, but I'd missed out from the England under-15s that year because Phil Neville was was playing better and got the opportunity to play ahead of me. And, obviously, his career went in a completely different direction after that. But quite strange, really. Both left-handers, both enjoyed playing cricket, but it wasn't to be for me that season. But it then progressed after that pretty quickly. I think the next England honours was England under-17s, I think, 18s and then 19s and then beyond after.
At that point, as a 15-year-old, did you feel you were on your way to becoming an England player?
I don't think so, no. I don't think you ever realised, you know, of what I could do or was it any better than anybody else? You see various players that you play with and play against who score similar amount of runs that you do or bowl in a certain way, and you think, well, they're good players. But I don't know when that sort of really dawned on me to think that I could go forward and start making a real serious career out of it. Obviously, I played professional since I was 17. It really only sort of kicked in when I was sort of 19, 20 and then understood that what I needed to try and do to up my game and get good enough to become a professional or who could perform year in, year out. But, you know, it quickly changed after that.
In 2000, Marcus makes his debut for England in a test match at the Oval against the West Indies. The following year, he scores his maiden test century away to Sri Lanka in Gaul, quickly becoming a fan favourite for his attacking style and fitting into the dressing room well. His first one-day 100 soon follows. It comes here at Lord's against Pakistan. With England chasing 243 for victory, Marcus is at his fluent attacking best, dispatching the ball with his trademark slog sweeps and hitting firmly down the ground. But it isn't enough, as Pakistan win by 2 runs.
So the game itself was a interesting game. I think we restricted them to 240 or 235 or something like that. And then we lost early wickets in the chase. Myself and Oeh Shah put on quite a big partnership, probably about 150, I would imagine, something like that.
97 for three, and this time he repeats it. That could go all the way for six. Great shot. A pull drive into the mound stand. Call it slog sweep if you prefer, but the effect is the same. It brings up England's 100. It's the first six of the England innings.
Sakleh Mushtaq into bowl to Triscothic on 97. He sweeps behind square. He's going to get possibly four there. Yes, he does. There's his century. A vain attempt by Yusuf Ihana on the deep backward square leg boundary to stop it. He dived away to his right. He couldn't prevent it from going over the ropes. Triscothic lifts his arms in the air, salutes the crowd with his bat, then salutes his teammates who are all out on the boundary on the left of the pavilion. And that's Marcus Triscothic's first century in one day internationals.
And then it getting so close at the end, I was so gutted that we didn't get across the line. And I should have, I think, with a bit more experience now compared to where I was then, I might have played it slightly different. I went for glory in the final over against Sakleh Mushtaq, tried to hit him out of the ground to try and win the game, only to get a top edge and Shahid Afridi taking a good catch on the running in from deep mid wicket. It was a shot that I played quite a number of times in that innings and succeeded by hitting it into the stand. So I went for glory and didn't make it, unfortunately. And then we ended up losing a couple of quick wickets after that, and I think we lost by two or three runs.
In goes Sakleh again and bowls outside the off stump. Swung away. He's going to be caught, I think, out there on the leg side. Two fielders are after it. They collide and they've taken the catch. Afridi clung onto the catch. Yusuf Ihana is still on the ground and there's a nasty collision out there. Both of them had their eye on the ball, of course. They both went for the catch. Ihana is still a crumpled heap, but Shahid Afridi has taken the catch that sends Triscothic back into the dressing room and means that England now needs six off the last four balls.
Andy Caddick got out on the final ball. He was third highest scorer with 10, which says sort of the rest of how that match went. But yeah. I mean, sort of bittersweet memories, I guess.
It was special in the fact that it was so nice to get 100 at Lord's. You know, it's such a special place and it's a beautiful feeling going there and playing in front of a packed house with your England kit on. You know, that's the beauty of what you get and you get to play. So, but to lose the game just takes the edge off it that little bit. Of course it does, but, you know, picking up your first 100 there is always a nice feeling.
In 2004, you were given the reins as captain. It was Michael Vaughan was injured. It was a famous test in the end. It was against New Zealand. It was Hussain's final test. Yeah. What was it like in the build-up to that match?
I think Michael Vaughan went down injured. I think he went to sweep one in the nets and his knee locked out. He'd had some various problems with his knees over the time. So I knew that obviously then I was going to be able to take on. I was a little bit nervous, as you can imagine, a bit of expectation of what was what I needed to do. You had other players and other ex-captains still in the team, and I had to take it on board. There was quite a number of decisions within the course of the game which were really important, one being taking the new ball. I think it was in the second innings. A number of people in the media were quite critical about the fact that we didn't take it. We basically banked on the fact that it would be an advantage not to take it because the ball would fly to the boundary quicker, as it proved when we batted in the last innings and we knocked off the runs. But it was a lovely, nice bit of feeling because you, as captain, you take on that extra bit of responsibility for the team's performance. Of course, not that I'd done it a million times before, but just the fact that it was your first test, it's at Lord's.
Yeah.
You want to win the game and you want to, you know, get ahead in the series as we were trying to do at that time. So it was pretty special to get the victory.
Do you feel, looking back now on your career, that maybe you could have captained England more? Because I think you only captained England twice, but your name was often mentioned, if not just media speculation.
Yeah. So I think there was a time when Michael Vaughan took over, obviously it was names were being branded around, myself, Michael, might have been Ian Bell or somebody at that point, but it turned out to be the right decision. Of course it did, and I think it would have been the wrong thing for me to be doing. It was only latter periods of my career when I was at Somerset that I really appreciate what I needed to do to become a captain. I quite enjoyed the being number two and helping Michael or helping Nasser or various people you know, as a right-hand man, if you like, and I thought that was probably my speciality position more than being the actual leader of the team. So looking back on it, I was almost quite glad that I didn't get the captaincy at that time. It would have been nice, of course, but it probably would have needed me to be playing for another number of years had I not finished so early. Then I might have had an opportunity.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Between 2000 and 2005, Marcus hits 13 test centuries, wins the Ashes and becomes a mainstay at the top of England's batting order. However, in February of 2006, struck down with depression, he leaves England's tour of India early. At the time, a virus is cited as the reason why, but it's the beginning of a long battle with mental illness that ultimately ends his international career. A few months later, he makes his comeback to Test cricket against Sri Lanka at Lord's and scores a century in his first innings back, but his last for England.
It was obviously a massive time coming back in, coming back from India previously, but that, you know, that season in particular was always, was quite a pivotal moment in my career because it was coming back from a lot of adversity and a lot of issues that had gone before me. So going back to Lord's is special. Even to this day, when you go back playing for Somerset, it still holds that special memories. But going there, playing for your country in a test match is the, as big as it can be for me. And it was always so special because it was a lovely feeling when you're there and there's a big crowd there, you're walking through the long room to go out to bat or to field. It just holds it in, I hold it in such high regard for what it is. So, beautiful place.
Do you think coming back from India, because that was the first time you'd left an England tour suffering from depression, it was in February of that year, the Lord's test, it's May the 11th, it's only sort of 3-4 months apart, what were you feeling? Were you nervous? I mean, you must have been
very nervous. The fact that, you know, I had so much to try and prove to people that I was still okay to play. Always those doubts. I remember doing press days here at Somerset, and the start of pre-season that year was always quite tricky. And then obviously the pressure then goes up another level when you go back to play for your country and that sort of time. So of course, yeah, I was pretty nervous, dealing with things away from the game and also dealing with things while trying to play and prepare in the right fashion. But I guess the biggest challenge was to almost trying to kid myself that I was all okay, and you know, none of the depression stuff had actually happened. But only later did I really sort of get a better grip of it. But I still managed to be able to put that all to one side at the time and go out and get runs, which was quite a special feeling. I think I'd got 100 against Bangladesh previously at Lord's.
Yeah.
But probably this one I regarded slightly higher, with all due respect to Bangladesh.
Yeah.
Playing against Muralitharan and the people that they had, it was pretty special.
Yeah, we'll come on to the actual innings now. The England team read Strauss, Trescothick, Cook,
It was his first test at Lord, a young Alistair Cook, hard to believe now. Kevin Peterson, Collingwood, Flintoff was captain.
Right.
Geraint Jones was with the gloves. Hoggard, Plunkett, Panesar and Saj Mahmood on debut.
Okay.
Freddie went out, won the toss, and it was sort of business as usual for you.
Yeah, just go out and get on with it. It's always the best time to be batting. As long as it's not been raining and overcast at Lord's, you're always looking to try and bat first. How many did we score in the day? I don't know. Do you know how many we scored in the day?
You'd think I'd have done my research on this one. You put me on the spot here. I think you finished about 300 for three at the close of play.
Yeah.
You'd scored your century. In terms of, you went out and I think you were sort of 90-odd at tea time.
Okay.
So you came in at on 90 not out. Or
What I remember most about the day is if there had been DRS, I probably would have been gone a lot earlier.
Yeah.
Murlithrum, once he invented the doucher, the one that went the opposite way,
yeah,
I never really picked that. I found him okay to play when he used to bowl his big off spinner and then the top spinner. I found him okay, but as soon as he invented the ball that went the other way, I had no idea. I reckon I was out at least two times LBW, and then eventually you get 100 after that and you're lucky to get past that point.
Yeah, he said Rudy Kurtzen on 28, you said you were stone dead LBW.
Yeah.
This is referencing your autobiography.
DRS would have made the biggest difference, definitely.
He's in again now, bowling wide of the crease. Oh, my goodness. Great big appeal for LBW. The ball flew off the pad, but Triscothic, in fact, was forward, and I think that was a rather optimistic shout by Murali, who would love nothing more than to take a wicket before lunch, but I don't think really he could hope for that. Do you, Mike?
Well, I think it's a rather good shout, actually. That's the one we call the doozer, the other one it's called. And that pitched on and straightened.
Here comes Murali again, in bowls, and forward comes Triscothic.
You went in at tea time, you were on about 90 not out, you were batting with a very young Alistair Cook.
Mm.
What was going through your mind in the Lord's dining room at tea?
I wouldn't have been up in the dining room. It would have been quite quiet down in the changing room, just sort of gathering your thoughts, trying to not really get caught up in the moment too much. I remember being very nervous, the fact that you're close to that milestone again. Although it would have been my 14th 100, it was still quite an important one because of things that had happened. You wanted to put to bed all the negative chat or the negative thoughts in your own mind and think, it's done, you can't do this anymore. You needed to put it all to bed and achieve something that you'd maybe thought sometimes had finally gone.
Here comes Murali Bowles, and Triscothic's got his 100 as he sweeps out to deep mid-wicket. You can hear what the crowd think of it. Kulasekara fields just one run down to the deep mid-wicket boundary. Triscothic, 16 falls and a 6 in his 100 on his return to the England side of 171 balls in 245 minutes. And that is his 14th Test 100 for England and his third against Sri Lanka.
And it's almost like relief, I think, more than anything else, just to remember the feeling of succeeding, overcoming the fact that you've had a lot of issues that have been going on that everyone's been talking about, and finally you've sort of gone, yes, I'm still good enough to do this, I can still cope with all the problems, I've put that all to bed, and we can move on and just sort of play cricket now. Obviously that wasn't going to be the case, but that very moment in time it felt like you were king of the world. Of course you were.
And then that evening after the close of play, you also got a double ovation, didn't you, because you got out for 106, but that was a particularly warm response from the Lord's crowd as you walked off.
Of course it was. Yeah, it generally is, obviously, when you've succeeded at that point. But I think everyone appreciated also the backstory to what's happened, and the things that had gone on before.
As Murali Bowles to him, he goes for his corner slip, caught by Jaya Wardner. A nice, neat catch, very similar, really, to Strauss's dismissal well over 2 hours ago. He pushed forward, he got an edge. It was slightly fuller in length, and this time no doubt the Triscothic was playing at it, and it was neatly taken about shin height by Jaya Wardner, this very, very skillful slip fielder. In fact, it was lower than that, so it was another very good catch by Mahila Jaya Wardner. And England have lost their second wicket at 213. Who knows whether it was a lapse of concentration or just one that turned a little bit more. But Triskothic has made his 100 on his return to the side. And just for a second before Jeff Boycott comes in, let's hear the reception he's getting from a crowd who've got to their feet to applaud him.
You know, going home then, going back to the hotel afterwards was a really nice feeling. My wife was there with my first child, just relaxing, sitting back, and almost again just that feeling of elation to know that I've succeeded with all the hard shit that I've had to deal with along the way. So because of everything that happened before, I think what made it even more special, the fact that you'd fought so much, not just playing against oppositions and things. You'd fought a lot of things and demons that go through your mind and questions that you ask yourself, and still not really understanding what was going on. You know, I was sort of up and down throughout the start of the season. But, you know, suddenly you've got 100 at Lords, and that is, you know, that's not a career-defining moment, but it's a big pressure off. Because you can, it's almost saying to yourself, you've still got the ability to do it, even with so much has happened before.
At the time, did you feel that that was it? Or did you think this was the beginning of a new chapter?
Yeah, I think I probably thought that it was the start of it all happening again. You know, the fact that it was going to be all okay. Coming back from India felt like a distant past at that time. I'm all okay. I'd say I'm in England. It's all right. I'm comfortable here. Yeah. Little did I know, obviously, the pressures would completely change again once I tried to go to Australia the following winter. But yeah, it's disappointed that was my last one, because I obviously expected that it would carry on a lot more after that. But not a bad way to go out, I guess.
Following home series against Sri Lanka and Pakistan that summer, Marcus still doesn't feel ready to go to India for the Champions Trophy. Instead, he targets a return to touring for the Ashes down under in the winter of 2006. However, after just two tour games in Australia, he flies home with a recurrence of the illness. So, was it too much too soon?
It might have been better just to try and take a bit more time, but I think gradually over the course of that summer in 06 that I felt like I almost got a bit of control over what was happening, and starting to, you know, to deal with the issues. But I felt almost that I needed to get back on and just get into the grind of it quickly. Otherwise, the longer I left it, the harder it was going to become. If you kept putting things off and trying to, I'll do the next one, that it might become tricky. But a lot of people were talking about maybe I could just play home test matches, or I could just play in England and do it that way. But it was never going to be the case. You had to commit to it fully, to be able to get back on the road and travel the world like the guys do.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because, you know, in this day and age, you may well have had a career as, say, a one-day specialist, in the fact that, you know, with England now, it's divided up so much.
Yeah.
You know, the hierarchy now is happy. I mean, they encourage players to be one-day specialists, test specialists, T20. Do you think you were, in that sense, maybe just slightly before your time? If you'd have been playing now, they could have said, look, Marcus, don't play tests.
Maybe a little bit. I think you could have been looking at it with a bit more planning and understanding. Back in the time when I was playing all formats of the game, and consistently. There wasn't many periods where I could get a great deal of rest, because I guess we all wanted to play every game. We weren't rested for as much as what it is now. The guys are given sort of little series off here and there, aren't they? I think I missed a series in Namibia and Zimbabwe, I think. I can't remember what year it was. So I was given that little period away. But it might have been different now, because of the whole structure, and people understand that mental well-being is a vitally important part of the guys who tour and play a good period of time now, that they have to give them that little bit of break, mental break more than anything else, where they can just be at home and just be normal for a little bit period of time, and then come back into it and get their brain engaged again. So it could have been different. We don't know. We'll sit back and ask the questions all the time.
Yeah, you can. Well, it's one of those questions that, it's with hindsight, everything's much easier, of course.
Yeah,
indeed. Moving on to sort of 2008, you end your England career, then you put a line in the sand. Reading in your book, there's a lovely moment where you go back to Lords to accept an award on behalf of Vodafone for a player award, and you walk up into that home dressing room in the Lords pavilion. Can you just talk me through that moment?
Yeah, it was obviously quite a nice occasion to be there, because obviously you've been rewarded for your service to the England team from the major sponsor that was involved. They were Vodafone quite heavily involved at that time with players. So, but it was nice just to spend a little couple of minutes just sort of taking in what it was really all about. The, you know, more than just the game, of what I was seeing. There's more history and more things that have happened at the ground to understand that. I've just touched the history of the game at that point, you know, and then you're leaving it on for somebody else to take on after that point. It was never to be my home change room anymore. It was always going to be, it was always only ever going to be in the away change room from that point on. But yeah, just a nice, just a little couple of minutes just to take it all in, look through the doors out onto the balcony, sit in the spot where you did, almost relive the moments that you had there.
Do you ever take the Somerset lads in there now and say, just nip down the corridor to look at the home dressing room?
No,
and meet Triscothic up there a couple of times.
I've not taken any of the players into there. Well, obviously, there's quite a number of dinners, and obviously you've got fellow players that have testimonial events there. I quite like nipping back up there with a few of the guys who are on the tables with me. It's quite nice, because all the doormen and all the people around there still treat you like an absolute king, and still treat you like you're one of the somebody who lives there almost, you know. So they'll just say, can I just nip up in the chain? Yeah, no problem. So they go and get the key, open it up, you nip, walk out into there, so sit down with the guys, and you go, this is where he used to change, this is where he used to change, this is where I used to change, and there's the honours boards, and you open up the doors and look out onto the balconies. Generally it's quite dark at that time, but they get that special feeling of, you know, because they appreciate the history, it still gives me that same sort of buzz, because it's still reminiscing of the times when I used to be in there quite a good period of time.
He's still enjoying a successful career with Somerset, 23 years and 24,000 runs after he made his first class debut.
Just coming on to 2016, it was another award at Lords. It was the then MCC media manager Neil Priscott called you up and asked you to ring the 5-minute bell.
Yeah, that was very nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, ringing the 5-minute bell, a great pleasure to welcome one of the gentlemen of the game, Marcus Triscothic.
Got the train up purely to pop into Lords to ring the bell, and I think I was in Lords for about an hour and I went straight back home, back on the train and came back in. But it's those sort of moments, isn't it, that you see and you watch people on the TV ring the bell. And you don't want to ring the bell at anybody anywhere else in the world, really. There are obviously special other grounds which are nice to do it, but the home of cricket is the pivotal moment. It can't get any better than that.
Good morning and welcome to Lords, the home of cricket.
Thanks so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure. It feels odd that we've sat and discussed your England career and barely talked about the 05 Ashes.
Yeah.
It's probably not normal for you, that one. But just remind me, it's your testimonial year at the moment. So what have you got planned?
Various events. So we've not done a great deal of yet. It's obviously quite tricky. You know, you start the first part of the year sort of planning everything that's going on. We had the launch event in April, early April, which was brilliant. We had Boise from Only Fools and Horses, a friend of mine. A long room dinner in October. We're doing a bike ride for the Children's Hospice Southwest, one of the charities that we're supporting over the year, along with the PCA Benevolent Fund. So we're doing a bike ride in the second week in October for 5 days. Something we've done a lot over the last few years is bike rides, raising money, either with the PCA Benevolent Fund, bike rides in the Tom Maynard Trust, or we've done various ones down this way, our own. So they're great fun, and then there's many other events over the course of the summer, but you can always check them out across our Twitter page if that's where you hang out, or on the websites that people can find online. So
what are those?
Good question. Yeah, you're testing me now right online. Just type it in.
We'll
Marcus,
find it, yeah.
Marcus Triscothic testimonial, and
just Google it.
You'll see it. It will come up somewhere, I'm hoping. So
yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. And just to finish off on 26 years, going strong. You're 42. You're still playing. Retirement still staving it off?
I'm beating it off every day, I reckon. Just sort of not... just hanging in.
Yeah.
Hanging in. It's been a real tricky start to the season. The pitch is obviously, whether it's just the weather preparation over the course of the year, just leading up to the start of the season, obviously getting snow, games snowed off because it was just, it was obviously a late dropping of snow. You know, so, you know, the knees hurt, the ankles hurt, the back hurts most days. You just sort of crack on and get going, get the body loose, and then it sort of disappears a bit. But the energy is still there in the mind. I still feel like I'm 22 running around. It just doesn't quite happen like it used to. And then you have to fight hard. You know, gone are the days where Taunton used to be a bowler's graveyard. It's either spinning around corners or at this current time, it's seeming quite a lot. So a bit of work to do and hopefully get some results soon.
Well, good luck. And good luck if with the rest of the career. I mean, it's seen it's so long that you've been playing now, and you've been a mainstay for so many cricket fans throughout there. Well, I guess being fans of the game and watching you is it's really quite remarkable.
Yeah, thank you very much. I loved every minute of it, and hopefully continue to love it for a period of time yet.
You've been listening to the Lords Cricket Podcast with the stories from the home of cricket and the people that made them. That was Marcus Trescothick on his final Test century, which was here at Lords. Such a genuine and nice guy to speak with. I really did enjoy that. It's his second testimonial year at the moment. I'm not really sure how you get two testimonials, but if you do, I guess Marcus Trescothick probably deserves it more than most. If anything, he can have three, if you ask me. I've included the link to his testimonial page in the liner notes of this podcast if you want to find out more about that. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. It was, as ever, great fun to record. Please do give the show a rating. It does help to get the podcast out there. And also, just do it the old-fashioned way. Tell a friend about it. Pass on the messages. Subscribe to the podcast too. You can do that on all your usual podcast providers. Also, follow us on Twitter. We're at Home of Cricket for more updates on the podcast. And me personally, I'm at WillRowe2. You can also contact the show by email. Just simply email podcast@mcc.org.uk. And also, as ever, a big thanks to the BBC and ECB for providing those commentary clips. Jonathan Agnew and Henry Blofeld, always good to hear them, really bringing the clips, really bringing the podcast to life even. Right, next week's episode is with Alan Donald, White Lightning. A childhood hero of mine, Donald v. Atherton at Trent Bridge in 1998, is still one of the most electrifying duels in sport I think I've ever seen. We, of course, chat about that, as well as South Africa's return to England in 1994, where Donald, as you might expect, takes a 5-wicket haul and gets on the honours boards here at Lords. It was amazing to sit down with one of the greatest quick bowlers of modern times and pick his brains about his career. As you'd expect, he had some brilliant stories to tell. So that's next week's Lords Cricket Podcast with Alan Donald. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.